Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. It's gossip galore time on a Sunday. And we're going to start off with something sad, the Matthew Perry funeral that happened on Friday. And all the former Friends co-stars were there. Did it at Forest Lawn, which is right near Warner Brothers, where they filmed it. I mean, it's kind of the place to be, I guess, if you're going to be buried next to the show that you starred in for so long. Matthew Perry's dad was there, his stepfather Keith Morrison from Dateline. And, you know, the former Friends, they issued the joint statement. You had Lisa Kudrow come out the one time before everybody. But that statement was, we're also utterly devastated by the loss of Matthew. We were more than just castmates, we're a family. There's so much to say, but right now we're going to take a moment to grieve and process this unfathomable loss. In time, we'll say more, as and when we are able. For now, our thoughts and our love are with Matty's family, his friends, and everyone who loved him around the world. And before the funeral, the establishment of the Matthew Perry Foundation was announced. And it's sponsored and maintained by the National Philanthropic Trust. And it's going to, you know, work to help those who struggle with addiction. And charity's already functioning, accepting donations. And as they said, guided by Matthew Perry's own words and experiences, and driven by his passion for making a difference in as many lives as possible. In the spirit of Matthew Perry's enduring commitment to helping others struggling with the disease of addiction, we embark on a journey to honor his legacy by establishing the Matthew Perry Foundation. Just, I mean, that's what he would have wanted, for sure. And that's what he did. He tried to help out as many people as he could. Now we go from that to the bonkers trial of the week, and that's Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro and his former assistant, Graham Chase Robinson, they've been in court all week. And basically, Robinson says, hey, Robert De Niro subjected me to years of gender discrimination and harassment. And this is not somebody who just worked there for 6 months or a year or anything like that. This is somebody who worked there from 2008 until they left in 2019. I mean, this was a long case. And De Niro says, oh, you know, she stole a bunch of money, misused company frequent flyer miles. And it's a two-week trial. Tiffany Chen testified. And remember, Tiffany gave birth to Robert De Niro's baby back in April. Isn't De Niro like 80? And Robinson said that Chen had a role in this unjust treatment. And there's text messages between Robert De Niro and Tiffany Chen. And basically, Chen told Robert De Niro that Robinson was romantically interested in him. And Graham Robinson, she started, like I said, working as an executive assistant at his company, Canal Productions, back in 2008. Wanted a career. And she got promoted to the director of production in 2011, vice president of production and finance in 2017. But she said it all came with abusive behavior. And he basically, the allegations said he attacked her in gender terms, calling her a bitch and a brat. He called his female business partner a see you next Tuesday, referred to his executive assistants as the girls. And she filed this lawsuit back in 2019. It has taken 4 years and 1 month to get it to trial. And she said De Niro would unleash tirades against Ms. Robinson, often while he was drunk, in which he denigrated, berated, bullied, and hurled expletives at her. Can you imagine an 80-year-old Robert De Niro just like drunk? How obnoxious would he be? And he would talk to her about his Viagra prescription, imagining him on the toilet, suggested a male coworker could be a sperm donor, treated her like an office wife, basically telling her to do female stereotypical jobs. He would urinate during telephone calls with her, met with her wearing pajamas or a bathrobe, would touch her, make her scratch his back, button his shirts, fix his collars, tie his ties, wake him up when he was in bed. And apparently he said nothing when one of his friends slapped her on the butt. But De Niro says, oh, no, no, no. It all started in August of 2019. They sued her, said that she ran up thousands of dollars in personal expenses on his company's American Express credit cards, converted millions of frequent flyer miles for her own use, treated the production venture as her personal piggy bank, and that she binged watched Netflix. They said that she transferred $450,000 in airline miles to her personal account. Spent tens of thousands of dollars of company money on food, including more than $12,600 at a Manhattan restaurant, and spent $32,000 in Uber and taxi rides over 2 years. I mean, she was paid in 2019 when she left. She was being paid $300,000 a year. And he said, you know, everybody was like, we're not sure if she's honest or doesn't have any integrity, no work ethic. And she quit. And she said that basically the lawsuit that they filed against her was retaliation because she was going to pursue discrimination claims. She wanted De Niro for a recommendation for a business school. And that was in July of 2019. And some lawyers came to her and said, okay, fine, but here's a release of legal claims. So then she wouldn't be able to sue him. And then she said, well, I'd like to see an attorney. And they said, well, if you do that, we're going to accuse you of misconduct, which they did in a July 2019 letter. And that was July 11th. And 2 weeks later, Robinson's lawyer told De Niro's team about possible legal claims against him, sexual discrimination, stereotyping, retaliation, and was going to, you know, do these claims. And just basically trying to inhibit her from pursuing her claims. Then De Niro filed a $6 million lawsuit against her to try and get her to drop her thing. He said, hey, her pay wasn't impacted by her gender, that she was the highest paid employee, except for who? His personal trainer. His personal trainer was making more than $300,000 a year. What's he giving him? $300,000 was what Robinson was getting paid. The trainer was getting paid more. And when De Niro heard about the lawsuit and the claim, he and Tiffany Chen had a text message exchange. De Niro said, who the F does she think she is? And Tiffany said, she thought she was your wife. I saw it from the beginning. I told you. And De Niro said, the balls, the nerve, the chutzpah, the sense of entitlement. How dare her? Well, this week they were on the stand. De Niro, 6 hours on the stand. Said her allegations were nonsense. He yelled out, shame on you, Chase Robinson, like it's a movie or something. And then on Thursday and Friday, Robinson was on the stand. And she said, hey, at one point I loved my job, even though I worked long hours. But towards the end of it, you know, I didn't like what I was being asked to do. And about the time that she was leaving, Tiffany Chen directed employees to dig up dirt on her. And that's where we got all the stuff about her spending. And Robinson said, hey, some of these things were for De Niro or other employees, and that I negotiated with De Niro that I could spend $100 per day in food, I could transfer the company's airline miles over to me. And at the beginning of my employment, way back in 2008, they had a discussion where they said, when she's on call, she could expense taxis instead of riding the subway. And she said on the stand, I remained on call from 2008 till the day I resigned. And then Tiffany Chen on the stand, and she put on the stand that she was his girlfriend of 5 years, and that she had 15 dogs and a human daughter, and that she had been upset about Robinson's influence over the townhouse that she would be moving into and the amount of control she tried to exert over De Niro. She was asked, did you at any time suspect Miss Robinson was romantically interested in Mr. De Niro? She said his credit card, not him. And the Tiffany Chen mystery, I mean, it was really weird because Tiffany Chen gave an interview to Gail King. And Gail asked Tiffany, hey, why are you wearing sunglasses? And Tiffany said that light hurts her eyes due to the Bell's palsy condition that she said happened after she gave birth. After. But there's plenty of video of her before the birth of the baby where she's wearing sunglasses on at night saying, I can't see, I can't see. And there's a video and De Niro says, come on, guys, she's pregnant. She was wearing the sunglasses before she gave birth, but she said that the eye trouble happened after birth. So why was she lying? And Bell's palsy affects one side of the face, but she said, oh, it's on both sides. Because photos would show it's not on either side. I'm just like, oh my gosh, come on. And it just, I'm not even 100% sure she was pregnant. I don't know. I've been thinking about that a lot. And I've also been thinking about the Katy Perry concert, final residency show in Las Vegas. Lots of celebrities were there. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex were there. Celine Dion. Gosh. I worry about Celine. And Celine had her twin sons there. And remember, they had seen a Vegas Golden Knights game earlier in the week against the Montreal Canadiens. Misha was there. And Mike Hess. Meghan Markle's friends. And Orlando Bloom was there. And brought their 3-year-old daughter, Daisy. So how come Meghan and Harry didn't bring their kids? Because the 3-year-old was there. So how come Meghan and Harry didn't bring theirs? I feel like they just don't want to spend any time. Maybe Halloween going trick-or-treating or something was enough. And Harry's talked before about being neighbors with Orlando. When he was on Dax Shepherd, of course, you know, he has to bring up security. And he goes, just 2 days ago, Orlando Bloom sent me a message because he's just down the road and we sort of keep in contact because of the paparazzi. And he sent me a photograph, which is security gone, of this long-haired guy with a beanie on, with his AirPods in, with his massive camera lying in the back of his 4x4, blacked-out windows, a woman driving, and he's laid down in the back of this truck taking photographs of them out with their kid and whoever else is in that area. How is that normal? How is that acceptable? When something's on Twitter, it generally, you know, it's in the trending section. Most things don't last very long. Like, when the Rangers won the World Series, it was like an hour that it was trending. Things just don't last very long. Even with that horrible shooting in Maine, what did it last over there? 24 hours at the most. But Meghan Markle is a fraud, or Meghan Markle is fake, and even now I think it said the prince and his wife or something like that. All weekend, from Friday up until now, it's been in the top 5 trending things. That's insane. That shows you how many people are talking. And it started off, I think, with the In Touch spread, the article. And the article goes like this. This is from In Touch. The bad blood was thick at the start of the year. Prince Harry and wife Meghan Markle were critical of his family in their Netflix docuseries. And then Harry skewered his loved ones in his memoir, Spare. By the fall, things seemed to have calmed down until a longtime friend of Harry's late grandmother, Queen Elizabeth, took aim at the Duchess of Sussex. Quote, I think the thing about Meghan was she had no idea what was expected of her, really, and thought it was sort of like being another actress, you know, riding around in a golden coach and everything like that. And that was Anne Tennant who said that in an October 20th podcast. She said, I feel very sad for Harry. And basically, they're saying that Meghan didn't take royal life seriously, treated it like a movie role, wanted to use it to become a bigger celebrity. And so, of course, that sparks a war. And what's interesting is Lady Glenn Connor, who is probably, what is she, like 90 years old? Something like that. And she sat next to Secretary of State John Kerry at King Charles's coronation. And she said, you know, I asked him what Americans think of Harry and Meghan. And he said, we all feel very, very sorry for Harry. I think I can just leave it at that. And so the implication was clear that Meghan was to blame. And In Touch asked a spokesperson for John Kerry about it. And John Kerry says, as a father in the public eye himself, John Kerry has nothing but empathy for people working through a family matter who all deserve privacy and compassion. And apparently Meghan was all upset and furious and said, oh my gosh, it's, you know, I'm the victim. You're trying to assassinate my character. And then you have Omid Scobie's thing this week. I know he's got this book to promote, right? Endgame, Inside the Royal Family and the Monarchy's Fight for Survival. The monarchy's not going anywhere. But he had the whole thing where Charles and Camilla were in Kenya in the red carpet. And, oh, because they didn't want to get on the soil. And everybody's like, oh, my gosh, why didn't they do that? And he said, oh, you know, there's always people around. And, you know, and they'll, if they see a bad optics thing, they'll go ahead and move the red carpet or whatever. Well, 5 minutes later, someone finds a red carpet of Harry and Meghan doing the same thing somewhere on grass. I didn't see Harry doing anything. And then they showed this other video. I think it was a, it had to be a Middle Eastern country. And Harry's walking down the red carpet, but Meghan's not allowed. And she keeps getting closer and closer to the red carpet because she wants to walk down it. But this book of his, I mean, this is going to be a war when this comes out, right? But basically, he says that King Charles is unpopular. Prince William is power hungry. Does Prince William seem power hungry to you? Now, King, you know, Charles is probably like, I waited a long, long time to be king, so I'm going to do some stuff. But I just don't see William, like, being power hungry. What kind of power does the king really have? You know, Parliament and the Prime Minister do it all. Yes, there's trappings of power and stuff, but it's not power hungry because he really can't do anything. And Owen, of course, wrote Finding Freedom. And the Daily Mail said, I've been told this is bad, very bad. It's unlikely that royal aides will comment, but if there are charges of racism, they will, of course, be robustly rebutted. And it's going to be serialized in a U.S. magazine, probably People. And on Amazon, it says about Endgame, penetrating investigation into the current state of the British monarchy. An unpopular king, a power-hungry heir to the throne, a queen willing to go to dangerous lengths to preserve her image, and a prince forced to start a new life after being betrayed by his own family. He chose to do that new life. He wasn't forced to do the new life. I don't remember him being forced at all to move to Canada. I don't remember him forced at all to move to Montecito. I won't remember him being forced when he decides to move to Los Angeles. That I don't get. Queen Elizabeth II's death ruptured the already fractured foundations of the House of Windsor and dismantled the protective shield around it. With an institution long plagued by antiquated ideas around race, class, and money, the monarchy and those who prop it up are now exposed and at odds with a rapidly modernizing world. Oh, Omid. It was supposed to come out in August, but he wanted to include some of the king's coronation stuff in May. And don't forget, in that first book, Finding Freedom, he said, oh, I didn't have any help from Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. And then Meghan goes on the stand in Britain and says, I didn't give him any help. And then she goes, oh, that's right. I forgot I authorized an employee of mine to brief Scobie and his co-author. So do you think she helped on this one? Yes. All right, you guys, I'm going to read you a tip I got for Halloween. I turned it into some blind items, but there was so much that there's only so much I could do with it writing, but I thought I'd share it with you guys. And it says, I'm sure you know all about the effery that went on during these Halloween parties. I was dancing during them, and the amount of celebrities that blew through the door, watched me in mine dance in costume and left without tipping was worse than ever before. That includes Miss Demi Lovato, who came through wearing a mask to disguise herself while that homely-looking thing she's with stood by her. He's been known to be on the apps, and he's been getting aggressive when turned down on them, so she needs to get her tests done and see what she's letting in her body. Let's get into the WeHo block party. I'm calling this glorified pimp bitch Lance Bass out by name. My girl's waiting table saw five women get slipped something in their drinks in full view of his little photo op with his husband, and he didn't do a damn thing to stop it. I don't know about that one. I didn't even make it a blind. That seems extreme. He was laughing and talking like normal. The women are fine, but that crowd was horrible. Then again, we all know Heart has a whole, that's the name of the club, has a whole phone stealing ring that's been going on for well over a year, and it's an inside job. David Archuleta was back on the streets going bar hopping with that boy of his. He's back on the coke and not good at hiding it. He looks strung out and paranoid, darting his head left, right, and back again anytime someone would walk up on him all night at the Abbey. Word on the street was that his family staged some intervention and he went to Japan to detox, but that must have worked for 5 minutes before he went back to blow. In general, I've been hearing more about David A. in the last 5 months than ever in my entire life. He's made some enemies in the circuit and he better be more careful because that doppelganger boy he's been dating won't save him from some of the assholes around here. Speaking of assholes, Adam Lambert was openly doing lines at beaches and getting aggressive with his twink when he saw him dancing with another guy and not asking for payment. Again, this part, I'm not sure about. Their lowbrow escorting situation is an open secret, just like how his twink's been lying about his age for years. Someone tried to go to WeHoville about it, and they told him that reporting on Adam L's bullshit would be career suicide. He has connections with Queen members, but everyone knows the IRS is looking into him, so good luck come tax time, Miss Thing. Quite the tip. I love that. And that's somebody who wants to get their point across. And French Montana wanted to get his point across. because he went to Columbia. Had a run-in with law enforcement officials. It was on Tuesday, Halloween. He's flying out of Cali, Columbia. And his jet was searched thoroughly by narcotics officers. Did they suspect him of trafficking drugs? Trafficking humans? Nobody knows. But he said, Columbia, I love y'all, but y'all ain't have to do me like this. I ain't have to have them dogs in there like that. No, we coke boys, but you ain't coke boys for that. Streets are so effed up, they thought I was bringing a big load. He wrote, trapped in Columbia. They thought I was bringing back the big load. Hashtag coke boys. But he's not the only one. I mean, Fetty Wap got 6 years in prison, right? Because he's running a drug ring out of Long Island. And he'd been in custody since August of 2022 because his bail got revoked. Because he displayed a firearm and threatened to kill someone while on a FaceTime call. So he pleaded guilty to the conspiracy to distribute 500 grams or more of coke. So prosecutors said, hey, he needs a longer sentence because he's using his platform to glamorize the drug trade while he's making millions of dollars. He got sentenced in May. And he had been arrested. I had forgotten this. He got arrested. You guys remember? In October of 2021, he was getting ready to go on stage at the Rolling Loud Festival. And they arrested him right there. And apparently he helped traffic over 100 kilos of opioids. Why don't I say that? Crack and cocaine over from the West Coast. And the FBI recovered 16 kilos of coke, 2 kilos of heroin, fentanyl pills, 2 9mm handguns, a rifle, a 45 caliber pistol, a 40 caliber pistol, ammunition, and $1.5 million in cash. Well, somebody who doesn't have to worry about cash for a while is SBF. It's Bankman-Fried. Was found guilty. Stole as much as $10 billion from customers to finance political contributions, venture capital stuff, and just spending, spending, spending. And the jury took 4 hours, right, to reach a verdict, but they didn't really. They spent about 30 minutes and then ordered pizza for themselves and reporters and stuff because they wanted to get fed. And they just said, oh, we just want some lunch first, and then we'll get back to delivering. But they had already decided. That belongs in the next season of Jury Duty. So he's facing 110 years in jail. Of course he's going to appeal. I don't think it'll succeed. He's going to get sentenced on March 28th. I mean, seven times, seven counts. And his mom and dad were there. They didn't look good. Right? Mom and dad looked sad. And when the first guilty was read out loud, dad kind of like bent over and looked bad, and mom looked like she was going to cry. And I mean, there are questions about how much mom and dad knew about everything, right? And there was a lot of talk from people about, hey, maybe he should have pleaded guilty. He wasn't going to get 110 years in jail if he pleads guilty. I don't think he's going to get a great deal like everybody else, but, you know, I think it would have been better because, you know, the way he was on the stand and everything, the judge's not going to do him any favors. But if he had pleaded guilty and said, oh, you know, I'm sorry and everything, you know, it won't ever happen again, the judge probably would have given him a sentence not much more than the people who did the deal. But maybe he thought, you know, I'll get free and then I'll just shove it back. I'll make a whole bunch more money. And we also might find out, because there's going to be a second trial in March for some other things that were severed from the case. And, you know, dad might be facing some issues there. So, because he knew a lot more than he's letting on. Apparently, Brad Garrett knew a lot more than everybody else did. Because there was supposed to be a BravoCon this weekend in Vegas. Joe Gorga was supposed to do a comedy show at Brad Garrett's club. Joe Gorga doing comedy? Well, it turns out that everything was a scam and no show was taking place. And a representative for Joe said it was coming from a fake Brad Garrett. Joe's attorney was scammed. They even had signed contracts. And that Gorga found out about the scam when Brad Garrett said it. And he was disappointed because he was looking forward to performing in Vegas. I don't know what he was going to do. And Joe said everyone who purchased tickets will be receiving their money back. And Joe won't be doing a show in Las Vegas. Do we think everybody's going to get their money back? But Brad Garrett went to Instagram. He goes, alert, this is not an actual show at my club, and people are being scammed to buy tickets via a fake link. And he's like, adding Joe. No one knows who you folks are in the comedy world, nor are you working at my club. Remove these ads immediately. And Catch New Jersey has nothing to do with this as well. So, I mean, it was just crazy. And Joe said he's going to be bringing his comedy show to Brad Garrett's Comedy Club, which is at the MGM Grand District. And Frank Catania was going to be there. I mean, come on. It wasn't going to be much comedy. Comedy was watching Mauricio go out with PK this week. They were hammered in front of the paparazzi. Like, Mauricio was, like, hugging on him. I think he was kissing on him. It was odd. But they looked like they had fun. And then Mauricio and Emma were seen hanging out again. They went to a club in L.A. They had a third party drive them. Probably a designated driver, considering how much Mauricio was drinking the other day. And they're there. They're like, they're not kissing or anything, but, you know, they're extremely close to each other, and they're going to a club at night. And they went through a side entrance, disappeared inside the club. Nobody knows exactly what they were doing in the club. But, I mean, they're going to restaurants, holding hands and stuff like that. And then, you know, Kyle was, ooh, removed that Instagram photo, which supported her, you know, showed her support for Mauricio and Emma. And Mauricio said, oh, I was just holding hands with Emma because he was overcome with emotion, discussing fond memories of his marriage to Kyle. That is the biggest BS pile you're going to see, in a sense, from Mauricio. And Kyle didn't buy that. But she says it was super disrespectful, but they're separated. And Kyle talked about divorce when she gave an interview at BravoCon. In the BravoCon Today for Real Housewives, ooh, Kyle had to talk. She started kind of crying because she was asked where she and Mauricio currently stand following their separation. And she said today, we love each other very much. We're family no matter what happens. We have a very strong family unit. My three girls still live at home. Only Farrah has her own place. It's still like, who's going to be home for dinner tonight in the family chat? Mauricio was busy doing Dancing with Stars, so he wasn't around as much. We're trying to figure it out. We know we love each other. And then she starts crying. Well, she hasn't been around a lot very much either. She and Morgan have been everywhere together. But she said, I just want to say a lot of people think, what are you doing? Fix everything. Obviously, that's what I would want. This is not my idea of my fairy tale, clearly. Anyway, I do appreciate all your support. And then they showed a clip for the crowd. And Kyle was, in this clip, was really frustrated with her co-stars for asking her questions about Mauricio during a cast dinner. So they finished showing the clip, and then Kyle starts explaining it. She goes, if I was called on the phone and asked one-on-one, I would have been much more open. Being in front of the cameras, I felt like I was on the defense. I just felt like everyone was coming at me. And Garcelle says, but we're on a reality show. Erica put everything out there. You've been doing it 13 years. That's part of our job, to ask things of each other. The reality is, we're on a reality show. I don't want to feel like we're the bad guy for asking questions. And Kyle said, well, it's not about you, Garcelle. It's more about Sutton. Because she didn't think that Sutton's questions were asked in a compassionate manner. At least ask with some compassion. That's all I ask. And she said that she didn't expect anyone to bring up her situation with Mauricio before she herself was ready to talk about it on camera. It was really difficult for me. That's what threw me off in the beginning. What did she expect? If they didn't bring it up, she's not going to bring it up. And she said about the thing with Mauricio, it was sort of new for me what we're going through. Even today, we still live under the same roof. I just didn't know how to manage that. I also am somebody who can't pretend. I don't have a good poker face. You can see I'm clearly not thrilled or happy or upset about something. I wasn't there to stir up problems. I didn't want to fight with him. The producers were like, something different is here. I told the girls from the beginning I was having a hard time. And she finally referred to her situation with Mauricio as a divorce. She had been speaking with a group of reporters earlier in the weekend. And then she kind of felt like she wanted to take that back later. What's not being taken back is Lauryn Hill in L.A. this weekend. Yeah. Lauryn was her usual late self. Very, very, very late. And there's this video that's circulating from the concert. And she said, I'm aware of people complain about me being late, but says, fans should count themselves lucky she even shows up. What? Come on. So we're fortunate if we pay whatever hundreds of dollars we're paying and then you show up. We should be grateful that you show up. Isn't that kind of your end of the deal? We buy the tickets and you show up and you play? Well, what might not be played is this movie Classified. And I know you guys never heard of it. But basically, it's an espionage thriller. And the producer, who's from Bulgaria, sued Abigail Breslin. She's one of the film stars. They filed a lawsuit on Friday. And they allege that her hysterical and imaginary allegations against Aaron Eckhart have imperiled the film's release. Well, Aaron Eckhart doesn't have the greatest reputation. But it filmed in Malta earlier in the year. And Eckhart plays a hitman who learns that his CIA handler has been dead for years. And Breslin plays his daughter. And according to the lawsuit, the entire production ground to a halt because Breslin accused Eckhart of aggressive, demeaning, and unprofessional behavior on set. And that it placed her at various times in peril. And she wouldn't be alone with him in several scenes. And Abigail filed a complaint to SAG-AFTRA. Blasted Eckhart's behavior, according to the suit. And Breslin still hasn't been served with it, so she didn't give any kind of response. I think Variety asked her for a quote, and she didn't have one to give because she hadn't been served the lawsuit yet. But she stands by her allegations. They did say Ms. Breslin categorically denies all contended allegations, unequivocally stands by her statement, which she confidentially provided to SAG. So the producer said, hey, to complete the film, I had to make accommodations, and it cost me $80,000. You want to talk about a low-budget movie when they're complaining about $80,000? And the lawsuit said that the film's on-set producer was compelled by SAG-AFTRA set safety rules to prepare an investigative report on the claims. But the lawsuit said his investigation found no evidence in support to Breslin's wild, hysterical, and imaginary allegations. And the lawsuit said that Breslin has since refused to sign her long-form contract and has insisted on extra money to do so. And without her signature, they can't distribute the film. And they can't claim a tax credit. This is low budget. When they're worried about tax credits and $80,000, this is low budget. And they also said there have been delivery issues to distribution partners because there are a few scenes where Breslin and Eckhart are seen together. Now, talking about money. Okay, I talked about it a little bit with the Canadians, I think, on Thursday, because they asked about, you know, Jamie Spears and the legal fees and stuff. I mean, everybody asks for legal fees. That's just the way it is, especially in a conservative, especially when Britney's got so much money. But on the 26th, through her attorneys, Britney says, hey, Jamie shouldn't get paid attorney's fees because it's just common sense that he had a well-documented record of misconduct. And, you know, talking about TriStar and stuff, and that she went on this tour and that Jamie and TriStar made $24 million, and that Jamie also took another $6 million from his daughter's earnings, paid his attorneys along with other people millions of dollars while pretending to be a volunteer. Mr. Spears should be required to pay his legal fees out of the funds he's already paid himself. We'll see how that's going to go. I'm sure that the lawyers have probably already written it off, and they're not going to go after Jamie because he doesn't have the money, I don't think. But, I mean, it is interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if the other attorneys get paid, too. Now, the other thing that happened at BravoCon was the cast of Southern Charm, right? And they were there. And it was interesting because I think it was Austin and Shep said they wanted to bring Catherine Dennis back, which would make for great TV. But that's just like a train wreck waiting to happen. And every day I expect to see her in jail for something. I don't know. I feel like she's living on the edge. But they were just talking about it and everything. But the fake story out of it was that Craig said that, oh, you know, my parents and Paige's parents, they finally met for the first time in Vegas this weekend. And basically, he said that Paige threw around the idea of eloping while in Vegas since both sides of their families were in attendance. And then Craig said, you know, someday I hope to maybe possibly propose to Paige one day. Whoa, that's vague. What's not vague is Pete Davidson saying F you to a fan who had a phone during a stand-up show. He was performing on Thursday night at City Winery in New York. And basically, he wanted this person escorted out. This couple had three phones, and they were escorted by security, had all their content removed. And Pete says that he pays $10,000 to lock up phones. I don't know if you're paying $10,000 to lock up a phone. All the phones. That seems high. I know that they put them in those, the bags or whatever, in the yonder pouches, but 10 grand? You know, that seems high. He didn't talk about it except, you know, on the thing. And it's so, okay. It's really common, obviously, for stand-up to get filmed. TikTok is filled with nothing but clips of stand-up from performers as big as Pete Davidson. It's a way you go viral. It's a way you sell tickets to other places. It's a way you can tell everybody where you're going on tour. It's a way you can show your best bits. I think that he doesn't want people to see when he's wasted, which is why he does it. I get it. I've had my phone taken away from places before. Yeah. And I, you know, it's not a fun thing, but you're always trying to, you know, take a video. I've never had it where there's a lockdown and, you know, try and sneak in another one. I've been at places where they say, don't film or whatever, or we'll delete it. I didn't get kicked out. Most of the time they just say, did you record anything? No. And they don't even check. If you say no, they just believe you. But if you say yes, then they watch you delete it. Because you're always trying to get the good stuff. Now, I don't know why they had three phones. I don't know the circumstances of it, but it seems a little bit odd. Also odd is Kylie Jenner getting an award from the Wall Street Journal. Which she bought. All these things are bought. Time 100, all this kind of stuff. It's different like the People's Choice where they're just trying to get people to come and so they tell you in advance. This is like buying the award. Because this fashion line that she won the award for came out like a week ago, right? And she didn't even wear the fashion line to the show. And Kylie's trying to rebrand, right? Trying to get away from the whole Tyga and then Travis. And now she wants to be with Timothy Chalamet. And Wall Street Journal, not a big fashion thing. And Vogue shaded Kylie in the award. And, you know, Kylie releases it. And there's the video of like Timothy trying it on. And it's horrific. It's basically plastic. It's a horrible product. And it just shows that the Wall Street Journal was just like, hey, we'd like Kylie to come. Now, another lawsuit was filed this week. Russell Brand has been accused of sexually assaulting an extra on a film set. It was filed here in the U.S. And it happened during Arthur, the filming of Arthur, back in 2010. And it's alleged that he exposed himself to this woman before falling on her into the bathroom and sexually assaulting her. And, you know, he's already facing, like, accusations of rape and sexual assault, emotional abuse. And he says, no, everything was always consensual. But he hasn't responded to this lawsuit. But this is the first time that any have really come into a lawsuit. And in it, the woman referred to as Jane Doe claims the actor had appeared intoxicated, smelled of alcohol, and was carrying a bottle of vodka on set. And this is July of 2010. And remember, Russell says that he's been sober, what, since 2000, 2002, something like that. So this would be a lie. And if you've listened to the podcast and I've gone over the Russell Brand stuff, I've told you that he has on and off fallen off the sobriety wagon, but always pretends that he hasn't. And that's my problem with it. People fall off the wagon all the time. All the time. But part of it is saying, I failed. But I'm not giving up. I'm going to start again, day one. And work on the 30-day chip, the 6-month chip, the year chip. And start again. Instead of saying, oh, yes, I've never strayed in 20 years. But she said that. Okay, so he exposed himself, and then later the same day, the plaintiff said Brand entered the bathroom after her and assaulted her as a member of production crew guarded the door from the outside. And Warner Brothers also named as a defendant. Other companies involved in the production are a defendant. And she says that she suffers from extreme embarrassment, shame, and fear, as well as finding it difficult to trust others. And she had professional concerns about being named in association with the case as she still works as an actress and fears she could be blacklisted in the industry. And she said that she was initially booked for 3 days, but after the assault was not brought back for the following days and paid only for one. I mean, the other things that Brand was accused of, which I've talked about, is four women said that he sexually assaulted them in the UK and Los Angeles during a 7-year period between 2006 and 2013, which would jibe with the 2010. The Metropolitan Police are investigating a lot of different ones. But yeah, 20 years sober. Now, the most interesting relationship to me right now in my mind is this thing with Dove Cameron, where she's you know, with this main skin guy, the lead singer, Damiano David. And they were in Brazil together. I've heard some things about Damiano, and Dove Cameron seems an odd companion. But she did go to his Madison Square Garden concert back in September, right? And there was reports that they were kissing at a party in October. It's interesting. I have a lot of questions about this relationship. And one thing that came to me right before I started recording was this stuff about Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie that somebody shared with me from Reddit, basically about his marriage falling apart. And this was what it said on Reddit. I know the information from a friend of the group. I will not and cannot mention his name here. Their marriage has been going through a serious crisis since the summer. The reason is a dispute over a child that Ben doesn't want, but Rachel does. The couple haven't been wearing their wedding rings for a while now, and Ben even recently unfollowed Rachel and her family members on Instagram. They don't even live together at the moment. Of course, the situation between them can still be settled. It depends on Ben if he wants to rethink his view of family life and accept the role of a father. It doesn't look like it yet. I will talk to you guys later.